Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening. Wherever you get your podcast, we appreciate that. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars, yelling, give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time. Whoo, boy, they trying to get Cam up out of there in Charlotte. Also, what in the world's going on with the Browns? And I'm going to do a music Ask Me Anything, but first. Boy, LeBron, everything seemed like it was chilling out and calming down about this whole situation in China. And then LeBron decided he was going to get out here and talk. Now, let's go with the timeline here so that everybody understands it. A little bit over a week ago, Daryl Morey sent a tweet that said, "Fight for freedom, stand for Hong Kong." It did not go over the way he thought it would. About 5 minutes later, he wound up deleting that tweet. His owner put out a tweet that was like, "Yo, you don't speak for none of us. He only speaks for himself. We are not about these politics." Okay, cool. And then they separated out of that. Daryl Morey the next day put himself out a little bit of an apology. The Chinese did a little saber rattling. That's what they call it, right? Saber rattling. A little saber rattling. Pull back some sponsorship deals. Pull back some distribution deals. All of this kind of stuff. Oh, by the way, we ain't heard nothing from Daryl Morey since. We heard some things from James Harden, but we ain't heard nothing really from Daryl Morey or Tillman Fertitta since that happened. The NBA put out a statement at first that screwed the pooch, as they put it, and then they came back and were like, "No, we are absolutely defending Daryl Morey. He's a right to free speech," because everybody at once is trying to protect the notion of American ideals while also not trying to mess up that money, because Daryl Morey absolutely messed up that money, and they got a whole lot of people that they have to answer to, and when they answer, they don't answer in terms of social stuff. They answer in terms of the money, all right? And so what you wound up with was the Nets and the Lakers. They over there in China for a week. They don't quite know what exactly is going on. They go play some games. They're not broadcasting those games in China. It's like those games did not happen at all. And we had a situation when we was over there where Adam Silver was not allowed to talk to media by the Chinese. The players did not talk to the media after this had happened. And see, what's interesting about that part about the talking with the media was when they said the commissioner was not speaking and the players were not speaking. My assumption was that the reason that the players were not speaking was because the league would not allow the players to speak. Incorrect. Turns out the reason that the players were not speaking was because they didn't want to do it. Right? They were not here for it. Shams Charania of The Athletic wrote a very interesting piece that breaks down what was going on in China with the players and dealing with the commissioner. And what happened was the commissioner came in there and was like, "Hey, I'm not going to be talking about this matter. So here's what I need. I need y'all to come out here and express the message that the NBA is down for free speech." Right? Yeah. They say, "I can't talk. But you fellas, y'all can get out there. Do me the solid, man. Go ahead and do that for me, man. Yeah. I'm on punishment right now. But you can go ahead and make this run for me." And LeBron got up and was like, no. We not about to do that. He says the league needed to come out here and to articulate what it is that is going on here. And then after the league articulates what's going on, we'll come out here and we'll stand behind you and what it is that you want to say. But you're not going to send us, the players, out here to deal with this. There's a couple reasons why LeBron was like, "Yo, we're not going to send the players out here to deal with this." One of those reasons was, and I think that this is a great point. He's like, "I got a lot of young dudes that are in this locker room with me, and they're not built for this, right? They are not equipped to handle what this situation is. We over here in this country, what I say last week was the most important thing when you go out of town. Getting back, right?" They're like, "Yo, man, these cats don't know what to do with this, right? Like, you might think I know what to do, but these cats don't know what to do. We trying to get back to the cribs." He was like, "Yo, that was one part. The youngsters, nah, man, they're not in a position to handle this." His other point, and I don't think that this one is nearly as solid, but I understand it. LeBron and the other players feel that if they had gone out there and messed up the bag in the way that Morey had, then they felt that they would have been reprimanded. They felt that they would have been disciplined if they were in that same situation, right? And I think that that context is important before we get to these quotes that LeBron had on Monday. The players that were in China felt as though the league was pushing them out front to carry their water to clean up the mess that was made, not just by Daryl Morey, but also by Adam Silver. If the commissioner had put out his second statement first, this thing probably dies down a bit, but he didn't, right? And so that's the perspective that LeBron is coming in here with, which is you are asking us to fix a mistake that you guys probably would not have forgiven us, the players, for making. And that turned into this.
Do you think that Daryl should have been reprimanded for that?
I think that's another situation that should stay behind closed doors. We are to see what happens with any one of our players or with an owner or with a GM at a later date. I think when we all sit back and learn from the situation that happened, understand that what you could tweet or could say, and we all talk about this freedom of speech. Yes, we all do have freedom of speech, but at times there are ramifications for the negative that can happen when you're not thinking about others and you're only thinking about yourself. So I don't believe I don't want to get into a word or sentence feud with Daryl, Morey. But I believe he wasn't educated on the situation at hand, and he spoke. And so many people could have been harmed, not only financially, but physically, emotionally, spiritually. So just be careful what we tweet and we say and what we do, even though, yes, we do have freedom of speech, but there can be a lot of negative that comes with that too.
Ooh, boy, LeBron had him heated over that one. They pulling out all the, I thought you was more than an athlete type stuff on him, right? I've seen it all over the place.
Yeah, there's something wrong with standing up to a totalitarian regime.
All that stuff. Hey, guys, let me ask you a question. This is a serious question. Why did Daryl Morey delete that tweet? Like, I think that's a question that everybody needs to ask themselves. Why, after 5 minutes, did Daryl Morey delete that tweet? Because as much as we would all agree, I believe, in the idea of free speech and the right to do so and to say whatever it is that you want, one problem that I do have here is I feel like Morey is being positioned as some sort of martyr, and he couldn't even stand behind a point that he was making for 5 minutes. Like, people really act like Daryl Morey sending out this tweet was him standing up to China. If he was standing up to China, he sat down 5 minutes later. All right, and I'm not so much knocking him for it, but I'm saying, clearly something happened in the course of that 5 minutes to make Daryl Morey be like, hey, you know what, maybe I should not have done that, right? And I don't know what exactly it was in those 5 minutes that made him feel like, hey, maybe I should not have done that. But the part that I think that, at least from what I can tell, that LeBron is getting a lot of the hell for is the idea that he said that Daryl Morey was misinformed. And I think that LeBron saying that Daryl Morey sounded misinformed makes it sound as though LeBron is taking the side of the Chinese government in this dispute with Hong Kong. And I see why somebody would make that argument that that was what he was saying. But what it did sound to me like LeBron was saying, and somebody could correct me if I'm wrong here, but it sounded more like he was saying, hey, man, Daryl did not think this through. He did not think about what was going to happen after he sent this tweet, which, by the way, is unquestionably true. It is unquestionably true that Morey had not considered what the play was going to be after this. He hadn't. He just thought he was going to send a tweet, get some pats on the back, maybe some likes and retweets. But there were far bigger ramifications to it. And by the way, those ramifications kind of sort of directly affected LeBron James and the players. Part of it, obviously, is the money, right? In Shams' story in The Athletic, he talked about, look, man, dudes had sponsorship deals dying on the vine immediately after this happened. There was all kinds of stuff that was going down for these players. And again, now the players are getting these microphones thrown in their faces to talk about something that they don't really know that much about. And with LeBron, it ain't just like a little money that LeBron is dealing with. It ain't just about the money LeBron makes for himself. It's about the money LeBron makes for everybody else. The same money, by the way, like if your issue with LeBron here is, man, he just out here looking for the money. I ask you a serious question. How do you feel about Daryl Morey? Because Daryl Morey walked it back based on the money. And I also ask you this. Do you think that Daryl Morey says this in the first place if Daryl Morey had any of his own money in China? Because, see, the money in China that Morey has to worry about is the NBA's money and the Rockets' money. But that's not any of his money. He doesn't really work in that department. Not only, again, it's not his money, right? So do I think that LeBron is looking out for his money? Absolutely. No question about that. Do I also think that LeBron is using this as a proxy for a fight that he's having with the NBA over this? Yes, I do. And I do think that is where the misinformed part comes in. It's him being like, yo, Daryl out here talking willy-nilly on the internet, saying this stuff. He ain't think once about the fact that while his team is in Japan, my team is over here in China, right? While Daryl is over here laying low and doesn't have to answer no questions, and while Fertitta is over here laying low and he don't have to answer no questions, we have to deal with all this stuff. We were over here in China dealing with this uncertainty and trying to figure out how everything was going to end. That is what we had to do. And not for one moment did Daryl Morey consider how these things would affect those people. He did not. And I get why somebody would be mad about that. Also, by the way, if your argument on this is that, yo, how you going to say that Daryl Morey was misinformed? Let me read this for you. Quote, I did not intend my tweet to cause any offense to Rockets fans and friends of mine in China. I was merely voicing one thought based on one interpretation of one complicated event. I have had a lot of opportunities since that tweet to hear and consider other perspectives. I have always appreciated the significant support our Chinese fans and sponsors have provided, and I would hope that those who are upset will know that offending or misunderstanding them was not my intention. My tweets are my own and in no way represent the Rockets or the NBA. This sounds to me like Daryl Morey saying that he believed himself to be misinformed. And look, I don't know if he was or was not misinformed. I'm just saying that Daryl Morey said this right here. And as much as we are hailing him, or many of us are hailing him as a hero in this circumstance, everybody seems to understand why he might walk this back, right? Everybody seems to have a certain measure of understanding for why it is that after this happened, that Daryl has not been like, yo, I'm going to double down and say this stuff again. Daryl hadn't been striding about this since this happened in the first place. Daryl has laid low and protected the money. And I ask you this question. If you got a problem with LeBron James protecting the money, why don't you have a problem with Daryl Morey doing it? Everybody's in protect the money mode right now. All of them are. Every single person. Why? Because the thing that brings them all together is the money itself. That's it. But what has happened after the fact here, and this bothers me greatly, is that rather than this actually being any sort of discussion about what is going on in Hong Kong or China or anything else, what this has become is an opportunity for observers to now come back and look at the players and be like, oh, y'all ain't really body-body like y'all claim. Guess who ain't body-body like he claims either? Daryl Morey. He's right here, your hero that you're holding up. You're like, yeah, he stood up to the Chinese. He stood up to the Chinese for 5 minutes. Like, that was it. He stood up for 5 minutes. Like, I recognize that when all this stuff happens, there's real stuff and people got their own things to be concerned with. And these are ecosystems that interplay with each other very, very much so. And everybody's got a whole lot of stuff to deal with, right? But my thing and my question for you is that if you are looking at this now as LeBron being hypocritical, I want to know what took you so long. And this is what I mean when I say I want to know why it took you so long. The Cavs and the Nets played a game at Barclays Center a few years ago. This was after Eric Garner was killed by the police in New York City. Got choked to death. I can't breathe. And LeBron was out there. I think Derrick Rose was also out there with the T-shirts that said, I can't breathe. I could have the teams wrong in the game, but you remember what I'm talking about. Brown was out there in the T-shirt that said, I can't breathe. Derrick Rose, all these guys. Like, all these dudes were out there on the floor with a T-shirt that said, I can't breathe. Now, the situation with Eric Garner happened in New York. It happened in Staten Island. And LeBron was on the I Can't Breathe program around that. In that same time period, there was a 12-year-old boy named Tamir Rice in Cleveland who had a toy gun on a playground. Someone had called the police and said, there's this kid out here. I think he's got a toy gun, but I can't be sure. Can you go check it out? Cops rolled up and, like, on some Starsky and Hutch type stuff, rolled up. Cop pulled the gun out, killed a 12-year-old kid. I ain't never heard LeBron James say one word about that. Not a single one. He had something to say about it when it was going on in New York City. He ain't have nothing to say about it when it was going down in Cleveland. And the only person that I have ever heard in the sports space say anything publicly about what might perhaps be a show of hypocrisy is me. That's the only one, right? Where were all of those people then being like, hey, LeBron, I thought you was more than an athlete? Now, I guess that catchphrase came around later, but the sentiment remained the same. Ain't nobody saying nothing about that. Nah, didn't come down that way. Nobody's really got a problem in the NFL with all these quarterbacks when this stuff is going on with the national anthem and everything else. Ain't nobody have a problem with people out there being like, nah, I really ain't got nothing to say about this, or not being informed or anything else. Nobody really had an issue with that. All right? The people they had an issue with were coming back at some point and being like, I'm not informed, are the LeBron James and Steve Kerrs of the world. People who have offered, for purposes of this discussion, kind of leftist ideas and criticisms of the president of the United States and everything else. And now you're like, oh, but you ain't going to say nothing to China? No. Dog, ain't nothing to lose in criticizing Trump. Like, you can go look at the polls, man. Criticizing Trump is a majority opinion. Like, you can make the decision if you want to, but there is no controversy in being critical of the current president if you don't wild out in the process of doing it. Like, if you thought that that made Steve Kerr or Greg Popovich or LeBron some variety of hero, that's you being dumb. They ain't having to lose in that case. They did not. This whole thing in China is a totally different thing. And so if you want to make the argument, oh, when it's all, you know, when people patting you on the back for it, you got something to say. Now you ain't got nothing to say. Yeah, basically. Yeah. That's kind of how things work in these circumstances very often. That's exactly what's going on, guys. Yeah. Okay. Glad we're all caught up. That's what it is. And so I wonder how much of this is, are people disappointed in LeBron? Like, are people disappointed in the idea that they thought that he was one thing, and then what has happened in this case is he has come up short? Is that what it is? Because in this time, where in the, and this is true, there was a chance for him now to, like, publicly fight for the people in Hong Kong. Instead, he chose to publicly fight for the players who were put in that situation. But there's nobody else to do that. You know what I mean? Like, nobody else is going to make this point about the players. I feel like the fingerprints of Rich Paul were all over that report, right? Like, that report was done in a way that came to the end of, and then LeBron James came to the rescue, right? It absolutely had his fingerprints on it in terms of him trying to put out the narrative of what went on or what was going on. It had LeBron all over it. What's wild to me is that if this originates with LeBron and his camp, they said all the right things on back channel, and LeBron said it all the way wrong in public. All the way wrong in public. Because in public, it sounded like LeBron was saying, hey, man, we got to hear out the Chinese and what they got to say. And look, I've been a person who has said that it seems that the Chinese people also seem bothered by this. I've gotten a level of criticism for that. I don't think the criticism is unfounded. I do think, though, that there's no way to tell what actual Chinese people think and what the Chinese Communist Party thinks, like what the line is between the two. I don't know. I have some logic as to why I could think that the people in China might have problems with what Maury did. But there's no way for any of us to know, right? Like, none of us have an answer for that. None of us are going to be able to come up with an answer for that, because the goal over there is to make it to where we can't come up with an answer to that. We don't have it. I don't. LeBron doesn't. Anybody else. But when he says the misinformed stuff or everything else, it absolutely sounds like he's sympathizing with the Chinese government. I do think that what LeBron was saying was the truth. This fool did not think for one second about the fact that I and these other cats were going to be over there in China having to deal with this. And if you ask Maury, he would probably tell you that he did not think of this. And let me tell you something else. I don't think people realize this. He didn't think about that there were going to be guys in general over there. Here's what I think he really didn't think about. Kyrie Irving was going to be over there. Can you imagine they put a microphone in front of Kyrie Irving? Right, can you imagine Adam Silver's heart in his throat while they ask Kyrie, hey, Kyrie, what do you think about what's going on with China? And Kyrie is like, as a man who has watched many kung fu movies,
oh, God,
and studied their philosophies, I'd be shook. I'd be totally nervous. 100%. I wouldn't have no idea what to do under those circumstances. Like, Kyrie, are you serious? Kyrie out here doing this? Come on, man. Nah. So did LeBron handle this poorly? Yes. I don't think there's any question that LeBron handled this poorly. I saw somebody I mentioned there was like, I can't wait to hear Bomani say that LeBron was right about this. Let me ask you this. Why did Daryl Morey say that stuff that he said after the fact? Protect the money? If you think that's what it is, that's fine. Then why are you mad at LeBron protecting the money? I've said from the beginning that this is as complex as any story that I can think of that we've been asked to cover here. This is. But now LeBron blew it in the way that he decided to express this point. But LeBron is not approaching this situation as a citizen of the world. No. LeBron is approaching this situation as a businessman whose business is tied to the NBA and as a person who always has to think very carefully about every word that he says in public and therefore has a resentment for somebody like Maury, who does not calculate his words because LeBron has to calculate his words in the way that he does. And then the irony is LeBron then came out in public and gave a statement that demonstrated that he himself had not calculated his words. The NBA cannot get to opening night any faster. All right, we'll be back in a minute to talk about Cam Newton and Kyle Allen. But first, hiring can be a slow process. Look, Cafe Arturo COO Dylan Miskiewicz needed to hire a director of coffee for his organic coffee company, but he was having trouble finding qualified applicants, right? So he switched to ZipRecruiter. And ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its technology identifies people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job, so you get qualified candidates fast. Dylan posted his job on ZipRecruiter and said he was impressed by how quickly he had great candidates apply. He also used ZipRecruiter's candidate rating feature to filter his applicants so he could focus on the most relevant ones. And that's how Dylan found his director of coffee in just a few days. With results like that, it's no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Now see why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. That's ZipRecruiter.com/BOMANI. ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. ZipRecruiter, smartest way to hire. All right, the Carolina Panthers are 4-0. They are 4-0 with Kyle Allen as the starting quarterback. And Rich Eisen went and did it, boy. And you know, we've talked about this before. I've mentioned this fact to people about how the last thing you want to do is have a bad game on national television if you're a quarterback or anybody else. You might never be able to recover. But the flip side of it is that you can have a good game on national television, or at least a decent enough game on national television, and that can really sway like public opinion about you. But then there's the other thing that can happen on national television, which is a little bit of a nugget from a broadcaster, and that can flip everything up. So what happened was they was over there playing in London. It was the Panthers and the Buccaneers. Kyle Allen was starting for the Panthers. And Rich Eisen mentioned that Todd Bowles told him that preparing for Allen was a little more difficult than preparing for Cam Newton because Allen was more likely to go to his outlet receivers. And I have to say this. If preparing for Kyle Allen was more difficult for Todd Bowles than preparing for Cam Newton, that either means A, that Todd Bowles is some variety of genius, or Todd Bowles is some variety of dummy. I'm not exactly sure which one it is, but it has to be one or the other. Because if that was really the case, if Kyle Allen was really that much harder for defensive coordinators to prepare for, Kyle Allen would have been the starter in week 1 for this team if that was really the case. Don't nobody believe that, man. Come on now. But now that's out there. And Allen, at the very least, completes passes, right? Like, I don't think he's bad by any stretch, but I don't think he's great. I don't think this is a guy that has potential to be a franchise quarterback. But he can complete passes, and if you're watching the game and you see him complete all these 11, 12-yard passes, 6, 7-yard passes, whatever, you're going to be like, oh, wow, he's completing passes. There we go. This guy is playing really well. And I think the more accurate thing for Allen overall is that he's not playing badly. And that's fine. Like, for an undrafted free agent, that's a pretty good thing that you are not playing badly. The team has held it down while he was there. And now we get the argument of, well, should Cam Newton be the starter when he is healthy? And people are actually acting as though there's some variety of mystery to this. Of course he should. Of course he should. Yes! Like, I almost feel like I don't have to explain this, but I wind up in a situation where I kind of have to. Look, even if you think that Cam Newton is physically shot, and there is a fair question as to whether or not he is physically shot, but we don't know that. When he came out in these first 2 games this year and looked bad, and all we thought was that he had a problem with the shoulder, it was very fair to wonder if he was done. Once we found out he had that Lisfranc foot injury, now we have to do the calculus on this a little bit different, right? Now you got to let the foot heal up, and then once the foot is healed, Now you got to go out there and see what it is that you got. Because maybe the shoulder surgery worked. I have no idea. None of us have any idea. We haven't been put in a situation that allows us to see whether the shoulder is okay. We don't know that. But when he comes back, even if you think that Kyle Allen is the greatest quarterback in the world, when he comes back, you go see what Cam Newton looks like. And if he ain't got it, then okay, you go back to Kyle Allen. You can do that. There's nothing that's going to stop you from doing that. But if Cam comes back and he is all right, then you roll out with your franchise quarterback. Why? Because after this season, your franchise quarterback only has 1 year left on his deal. Like, you have to figure out what you have here. Because either Cam is your franchise quarterback or you don't have a franchise quarterback on the roster. If they thought for a second that Kyle Allen was a guy who had the potential to turn into a real life starting quarterback, there's no way in the world they take Will Greer in the third round of the draft. It doesn't happen, right? They don't think Kyle Allen is that guy. And maybe he has exceeded a level of expectation since they've gotten him out there, but they don't think he is that guy. So why in the world would you not put Cam Newton back out there as your starting quarterback once he is healthy? People got mad at me when I said this on the internet, but it's the truth, man. Look, Teddy Bridgewater, they won against Seattle. They won this game last week. They won the game before that. 3-4, something like that. They've been winning. Hey, man, ain't nobody out here talking about ride the hot hand out. Ain't nobody out here saying, yo, when Drew Brees comes back, you can't put Teddy on the bench. And I had people hit me back and be like, yeah, because that's because Drew Brees and Cam Newton, you're not acting like Cam Newton is as good as Drew Brees. I'm acting like Drew Brees is like 41, 42 years old. However old he is. Like, that's what I'm acting like. I'm acting like Drew Brees is old. I am acting like we have seen Drew Brees in a measure of decline, right? No, you don't ride the hot hand just because the dude's out there. Nobody has an argument for me to say that Kyle Allen is really good. The only argument they're trying to make is Cam Newton is shot. There is no actual data point to indicate that a healthy Cam Newton is shot. We know that an injured Cam Newton is shot, right? And so you can make the argument from there, well, I don't know if he'll ever be healthy again. Well, when he comes back from this one, he's probably going to be as healthy as he's been since he got into the league, right? All that time to recover the shoulder and however much time is necessary to recover the foot, that would be a dude who is healthy. You see what he is when he's healthy, except people just seem to be looking for reasons to toss him out of here. And by the way, before any of you get ridiculous on this, I am using the same thought process that I used when I said that Dak Prescott should not have kept the job over Tony Romo. Just in case you get this twisted, I'm riding out the same thing. This situation is very similar to that one in that the last time we had seen Tony Romo play before he got hurt, Romo was excellent. The last time we saw Cam Newton play before he got hurt, he was excellent. He was in the discussion for the MVP last year, halfway through 2018. Then the shoulder went out, right? So if this guy is healthy, see what you got. If for no other reason than the future of the franchise and figuring out what your moves are going to be with Cam. But just because you won four games with Kyle Allen doesn't mean you're going to win four more. He ain't no good luck charm necessarily. No. He ain't even running the offense in the way that you know North Turner wants to run it. North Turner wants that ball going down the field. Kyle Allen can't throw the ball down the field or has demonstrated no actual interest in throwing the ball down the field. So you get Cam back out here. And as look, I understand a lot of y'all been looking for a reason to get that dude up out the paint. Right? And maybe you think this is your chance. But if anybody's trying to do anything with any good sense, you've got one of the most talented quarterbacks of all time. Go give him a chance to be that dude. And if he ain't got it, sit him down. But that's worth rolling the dice on at least one game before you decide that Kyle Allen is your new Drew Bledsoe. He probably ain't even your new Dak Prescott. He reminds me a little more of your new Gardner Minshew. And if you got Cam Newton or Gardner Minshew, you go see what Cam Newton's doing. Yo, man, why the Browns so sorry? This has not gone the way I think that any of us thought it would with him. What's interesting about him is accuracy was his calling card, right? Coming out of school, accuracy was the thing with him. He can put the ball exactly where he wants it. And you saw evidence of that last season, but he also threw a bunch of picks. And now this year, he has thrown 11 interceptions. To put in context the 11 interceptions and what that means, Jameis Winston threw 5 interceptions over there in London on Sunday. 5 interceptions. He still hasn't thrown as many interceptions as Baker Mayfield has. this season. Now, you can go talk about the bad luck that he's had and all this and da-da-da. The dude is still throwing 11 interceptions, and even if you think that the interceptions are bad luck, he's only thrown 5 touchdowns. And a big part of the reason why we're here in the Baker Mayfield Love Fest is all those touchdown passes he threw last year. He's only thrown 5 this year. And this team, unlike the last one, has Odell Beckham, right? And the dude has thrown 5 touchdowns only. To be fair also to Mayfield, I want to make sure to be fair. That offensive line is not good. There's no way around the fact that that offensive line is not good. But even with it not being good, he appears to have a great running back. He appears to have a really strong 1-2 wide receiver situation. David Njoku got hurt at tight end. Ricky Seals-Jones has been plugged in there. That's another one of those ghost of 5-star pass like Kyle Allen. Ricky Seals-Jones is out here looking good at tight end. There seem to be guys for him to throw the ball to, guys for him to hand the ball to, and while there are legitimate criticisms of the offensive line, they seem to be doing okay when it's time for Nick Chubb to run the ball. The other thing about having a bad offensive line is Andrew Luck played behind bad offensive lines and obviously paid the price for it, and he maybe at times held the ball too long while he was there, but he still could find ways to get the ball out. When that pressure comes on Mayfield, man, it is panic time for him. It is 100% panic time for him. And I think that these are things overwhelmingly that can be corrected, right? I absolutely think that those things can be corrected. So, like, it's not like, oh, Baker Mayfield's bad and he'll always be bad. But this is a serious question. Gabe, I wonder what you think about this. Has Baker Mayfield been the worst quarterback in the NFL? A starting quarterback so far?
Has anyone thrown as many picks as he has?
No. No. All right, to be fair, Josh Rosen. Josh Rosen has been worse than Baker Mayfield. I don't feel like you can count like Luke Falk or nothing like that. Like, that's not even fair. But no, I would definitely say that Josh Rosen has been worse. Jameis Winston has actually been better. Not by much, you could argue, but he has been better. Mayfield is only averaging like 50, is only completing like 56% of his passes. Like, this is stunning. What has happened here, but what's just as stunning is kind of the hand-holding that people are doing and kind of how slow people are to just be like, hey, man, the number one overall pick has been bad this year. And not only has he been bad, he also doubles as a jerk. Like, he plays the jerk role very well, and this is something I want him to understand for his own sake. Like, you can't change who you are. You can only be the dude that you are. But the way that Baker Mayfield kicks it only works when you're doing well. Like, you cannot kick it the way he kicks it if you're not playing well. And at some point, the kind of lashing out and all of that and looking for slights and everything else, you ain't got to look for slights no more, man. Your film is a slight. Like, that. In fact, that seems to be who Baker Mayfield needs to be trying to prove wrong. Not me, not you, not us, the film. You need to be going to the film and being like, yo, I ain't even like that. That seems to be the dude for him. Meanwhile, Odell Beckham's over there like, damn, I came all the way here to play with Eli? What's the difference? That dude went to a much less cool city to go play with a cooler version, apparently, of Eli Manning. Who saw that coming? He did not. Cannot blame him. Did not see that coming. But this has been, look, this team has been a disappointment, right? There was a level of expectation for the Browns for a lot of people coming in here because of the talent that they put together. But a lot of that expectation was based on the presumption that Baker Mayfield had already arrived. And look, this happens. Second year can be rough on quarterbacks. Sometimes it's the third year. Peyton Manning, it was the fourth year. The fourth year was when it came apart for Peyton Manning. Threw a lot of interceptions his rookie year, was really good his second year. But it was the fourth year for him that was really, really bad, right? So this happens, and maybe it's a case that Mayfield can just come and he can overcome this. But as much as people talk about, you know, the Browns tanked that out for those years and they got all these draft picks to put them in that position, in this position to be, you know, finally get a team that's going to jump off. Go look at Football Outsiders DVOA numbers. The Browns basically look like the Browns. They look like they have always looked. That is where they are. I'm about to pull up these DVOA rankings right now because I feel like week 6 rankings should be out here by now. No, we just have through week 5. Through week 5, Gabe, Cleveland's DVOA was 24, which I guess is better than they have been in previous years, but really kind of in line with what they've been before. Offensive DVOA rank 29th. defense 15. So 29th, that's what this offense is, the 29th best offense in the NFL, right? And their overall DVOA would be a lot lower, except for the fact that their special teams are ranked third. And this goes back to that dude. So we're going to see what he's got. I just want you, how patient are you with that dude, right? Because in the end, you can get all these picks. They got it right with Myles Garrett, all that stuff. But if you get it wrong on quarterback, all that stuff can be for naught. And right now for the Browns, that all looks for naught.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bo, this first story is from Science with Becky for our advice.
It's not often that you hear government officials tell the public to kill something immediately on site, but that's what the Georgia Department of Natural Resources said last week in a statement about an invasive fish called the northern snakehead, which can breathe air and survive on land for days at a time. This animal is native to Eurasia, but it has infested freshwater systems in over a dozen states in recent years. This month, it was spotted for the very first time in Georgia by an angler at a private pond northeast of Atlanta, prompting officials to advise anyone who sees the fish to kill it, freeze it, and turn it over to the state's Wildlife and Fisheries Division. The northern snakehead is a narrow fish that can grow to about 3 feet long and resembles the bowfin, which is native to North America. But unlike the bowfin, or really the vast majority of fish, the snakehead has evolved the incredible ability to breathe air, which enables it to wriggle across land to infest new water systems, causing serious potential damage to native wildlife. The fish caused its first major splash in the U.S. back in 2002, when hundreds of snakeheads were discovered in a pond in Maryland. The event inspired two horror movies made by the Sci-Fi Channel and has put American wildlife officials on alert ever since.
Look, man, if I see a fish breathing air, I understand that you want us to kill it, but I'd be very afraid that it was going to kill me. Like, what if I miss?
It assumes that you have something to kill it with on you.
Yeah, it does, right? Because, I mean, you want me to kill it? Shouldn't be, like, out of water kill it? Oh, that's right. The fish can breathe.
First instinct is not to pull out something to kill it with. It is pull out your phone to take a video with it.
Yeah, or, I mean, I will say this. This makes me, like, reevaluate some of my stances on gun possession. Like, if I walk somewhere and I see a bunch of fish and they all breathing on air, I'm going to be right back. I'm going to the pawn shop.
Well, I guess if you're out fishing, maybe you've got some sort of, like, field knife that you use for cleaning the fish.
Well, I guess there's that. And also, I know I got a, you know, few friends in the fishing demographic. They don't need to go to the pawn shop. They ready for that fish. Or, you know, me.
All right. This second story is an environmental story.
Hey, this is Shannon Paulus. I'm a reporter for Slate. Last week, hundreds of thousands of people were without electricity in Northern California. Pacific Gas and Electric intentionally shut down power lines for a large swath of the state. It was a purposeful blackout. It's not the first time PG&E has done that kind of blackout, but it was the largest. Cutting down the power in a state is kind of a disaster, but it was done to avoid a potentially larger disaster in the form of a wildfire. The Weather Service was predicting strong, dry winds on Thursday morning. They peaked at about 70 miles per hour. And those kinds of winds can tumble over power lines, causing them to spark against dry vegetation. And there are a lot of factors that go into a wildfire happening, including warmer summers and that super dry vegetation. And that's all kind of exacerbated by climate change, but you still do need a source for the fire to start. And PG&E has that source in power lines. And this wasn't out of a wild abundance of caution. PG&E has been responsible for many fires in the state in recent years, including last year's campfire, wherein 86 people died. It was, you know, mitigating one disaster with another disaster in the form of this giant blackout. What other options did PG&E have? One would be to have power lines that are entirely underground, power lines that can't topple over. The reason why PG&E doesn't put all of the power lines underground in California is that that would be very expensive. It is doing that in Paradise, California, where the deadly campfire happened, but also PG&E could have been doing other things to ensure that their overhead power lines were safer. Lots of transmission towers that hold those power lines up were aging, and in advance of the deadly campfire, PG&E had actually pushed back doing crucial updates on power lines in Paradise, California. So while shutting off the power was perhaps the best option in the moment of last week, it didn't have to get to this point.
Yeah, I feel like not nearly enough is made of the fact that they had to go to like rolling blackouts in a major populated area of the United States because they're trying to stop stuff from catching on fire. Like, hey, that's your part of the world, right?
It is.
Yo, that is wild.
Yeah, my dad hit me up and he's like, PG&E's holding us hostage.
Dag, like, this is where we are? Like, yeah, don't we need a blue ribbon committee on this? Like, we need some solutions, right?
And it didn't necessarily fix the problem or prevent the problem, right? Because there were some wildfires that happened in California within the last week.
Yo, no, man. Living in California, like, that's the riskiest thing I've ever considered doing. Well, I guess I've done it before. But it just feels like a very risky thing to do. Like, it feels like a bad neighborhood with a lot of good-looking girls. They're like, yo, you sure it's worth it? No, I'm going to give it a try. I'm trying to make my dreams come true.
And PG&E, so they're the utilities company in California for the most part, and they're the ones who instituted this blackout. They're basically bankrupt or were going bankrupt because they're getting sued for being at fault to some degree for the wildfires last year. So now they're trying to, you know, put in these preventative measures, and they can't do right here because people are upset about them turning off the power.
Yo, they're like, yo, what are we supposed to do, man? You know what I'm saying? They're like, what y'all want from us, bro? What y'all want?
They can't do right.
Nope.
This last story is from Tech.
Jefferson Graham, USA Today, your boss is probably spying on you while at work. Sounds terrible, but it's true. According to business consultancy Gartner, some 50% of businesses in 2019 are watching over you, looking at everything you're doing, and that number is going to grow to 80% by next year, by 2020. How are they looking? They're reading your emails. They're looking at your texts. They're checking your calendar to see who you're meeting with, and it goes beyond that. Some companies are using the video camera on the webcam to look at your eyes to see if you're happy. So, folks, if you are typing things in an email, in a text, in an inner office communication, and you think it's private, ha, think again. It's being looked at. It sounds evil, but a lot of it has to do with companies trying to figure out if people are happy. You know, all those surveys that you keep getting. Are you happy at work? How can we improve? By them monitoring you, it gives them more information. I don't like it, and you probably don't like it either. And there's only really one thing you can do if you really don't like it, which is to quit. Good luck with that.
Yo, I guess that's one of those that's not like terribly surprising, but it is still a little like, damn, for real?
Yeah, it also depends on where you work, too. Like, if you work for a smaller operation, there's maybe a closer eye on you or what have you.
Yeah, see, but I feel like it might be in a bigger operation because they got more means to go about doing this.
So really what you're saying is no matter what, they've got their eyes on you.
Yeah, man. Yeah. And like, you know, yeah. Like, especially if you work in one of the buildings where you can't get no cell service once you get inside, so now you got to get on the Wi-Fi. They on you, bruh. They on you. Basically, we're just hoping that they ain't too busy to look into what we over here doing. That's what we got, right? Just hoping they a little bit too busy to look into whatever's going on. But nah, man, our whole lives are a running log of everything.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bo. So around this time of the week, we do our listener-generated voicemails. So we thought it'd be a good time to do a music AMA. Our first comes from Roger in Cleveland.
Bomani, what's going on? This is Roger calling in from Cleveland. Hey, been a big fan for years now. And most of us who've been around for a while know that you have a pretty large disdain for Babyface. For myself, I've never entirely known exactly what that stemmed from. I always thought that Babyface was a pretty decent writer, at the least. So maybe if you can elaborate on that for people who don't know or people newer to the program, I think that would be pretty dope. Peace.
You thought he was a decent writer. You ever looked at any of the words, man? Right? Have you even tried to look at some of the things that this dude be saying? All right, let's go with this. I was a typical guy. You came along and blew my mind. You were running fast. I was running slow. Everybody said that it would not work. Love came and set me free. You were standing there to rescue me. Love caught it, we thought. Why can't we be in love? Well, why? It's no crime. If I'm guilty of love, let me do my time. Why? It's no crime. Everybody needs love, and baby, so do I. That don't sound whack to you. That don't sound whack to you. And like even songs that jam, like Two Occasions is jamming. I only think of you on two occasions. That's day and night. How long did that take you to come up with, Babyface? Like y'all don't know a simpleton when y'all hear one. And I say my man's done some good work, right? I don't want to pretend like my man has not done some good work. I'm just saying, y'all don't know a simpleton when y'all see one. You start thinking of some of your favorite Babyface songs. They sound real good, but ultimately, that dude is a simpleton. And the problem that I have is, y'all get mad at me for saying that he's a simpleton. I'm not saying that you're a simpleton because you like a simpleton, but just go acknowledge the simpleton. That's what is going on. He is a songwriting simpleton who has beats.
This is Pastor Leo from Columbus, Ohio. Is there an underappreciated or underrated collaboration that you think people should know about? And it can be artist to artist or artist and producer. What's a collaboration that people need to know about or haven't heard about and needs more exposure? Keep up the good work. It's the right time.
Yeah, I don't exactly know how to answer that one. An underrated collaboration. Huh. I will say this. I don't know if it's the greatest, but there is a duet of Bill Withers and Bobby Womack. I think it's called It's Over Now. And just for you to imagine a couple of like super country in their own ways, you know, not always on the side of right dudes. There you go right there. Like it is, that is a Liquor House record if a record was ever made for the Liquor House.
Yo, Bo, this Philly Shades. I'm stationed in the ATL. We all know Kanye be tripping. Other than Stevie Wonder, who's the most talented person on the planet, left musically? Help me out, man. Thanks, bro.
I mean, like, you don't think number two is Kanye, do you? That can't be possible. I don't know, number two, other than Stevie. I guess that was an unfortunate reminder that Prince is no longer alive. Like, I ain't gonna lie, on pure talent, Lenny Kravitz might be more talented than Kanye. He's just not creative at all. Right, you know, that's my Lenny Kravitz criticism. Huh. Gabe, you got anybody?
The most talented person I can think of musically.
I don't know. I will tell you this, though, and I'm not saying that this guy is the winner. I'm going to throw this out there. I know this ain't necessarily going to be for everybody, but that's fine. Gabe, are you up on this dude, Sturgill Simpson?
I am not.
All right, country dude, right? And so I saw him on the Grammys a few years ago and thought it was jamming, and then didn't really give it no thought. And then I saw some people really talking about his new record, and I was like, okay, cool, I'll check it out. Yo, that thing is jamming. One, it absolutely has country sensibilities, but it is not a straight-ahead country record. The songwriting is very much so in line with country. A lot of the vocal phrasing and stuff like that is very much in line with country, but it sounds more like a My Morning Jacket album than it does anything country. That being said, what I didn't realize and why I'm bringing him up in this context, because the dude's a really good singer and a really good songwriter, but what I didn't realize until checking the notes is that he's playing his own guitar, and that dude is a monster. Like, track one is a guitar instrumental that's like, oh, okay, so this is what we're here for? Got you. I think it's called Ronin, R-O-N-I-N. But anyway, yeah, even if you think that ain't your sensibility or you think that ain't your bag, you might want to give this a run. On his previous album, he had a song where he was talking about getting high and playing Goldeneye. And I said on Twitter, I was like, oh, damn, I didn't know you went to a HBCU. And people hit me back and were like,
that wasn't just happening at HBCUs. You don't goddamn say. Right? Really? This dude who sings country music is singing about the same thing, and you're telling me it was not the only thing? The HBCU was not the only place? I know it wasn't the only place. I'm just saying a man has relatable experiences. But hey, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thank you to our sponsor, ZipRecruiter. Also, thanks to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Becky Ferreira of Vice. Check out her story on a fish that can breathe air, like really breathe. Check that out. Thanks to Shannon Paulus of Slate. Check out her story on PG&E in California shutting down power to try to prevent fires. And thanks to Jefferson Graham of the USA Today. Check out his story on employee monitoring going up at your job. Remember to check out the Mina Kimes show featuring Lenny, her dog. She chats with Adam Lefkoe of Bleacher Report about week 7 in the NFL. You can download that and The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear. More driven.